Industrial Society and Its Future is otherwise known as the Unabomber Manifesto, written by Ted Kaczynski. Kaczynski is a terrorist who killed 3 people and injured 23 others by sending bombs through the mail between 1978 and 1995. He used his terror campaign to exploit the negativity bias of media and pressure the Washington Post and New York Times into publishing his 35,000-word anti-technology manifesto. Obviously, what Kaczynski did was horrible, but his manifesto is a thought-provoking, albeit extreme, perspective on technology. And so here is my summary of the Unabomber Manifesto. This is Love Your Work, and I'm David Cadavy. The manifesto begins with a seemingly out-of-place rant about leftism creeping toward totalitarianism. According to Kaczynski, leftists have low self-esteem, are defeatist, and hate themselves. They hate success and feel the groups they try to protect are inferior. They are overburdened by guilt over their natural drives and so want to turn into issues of morality, things that don't have anything to do with morality, such as policing the use of words to which they themselves have applied negative connotations. When people hear anti-leftism, they tend to assume the person with those views is far right. But it's worth noting that's not Kaczynski's view. A quote, "Leftists want to preserve African-American culture, but in what does this preservation of African-American culture consist? It can hardly consist in anything more than eating Black-style food, listening to Black-style music, wearing Black-style clothing, and going to a Black-style church or mosque. In other words, it can express itself only in superficial matters. In all essential respects, most leftists of the over-socialized type want to make the Black man conform to white, middle-class ideals." In sum, Kaczynski is anti-left because ultimately leftists still work to preserve the industrial system. This appears to come out of left field, but the meat of the manifesto is more coherent and later we'll better understand why he brought up his views on leftism. As industrial society progresses, Kaczynski says, people lose more and more freedom. This makes them miserable because it robs them of what he calls the power process. The power process consists of 4 main elements. 1, a goal. 2, effort put forth toward that goal. 3, the attainment of that goal. 4, autonomy in pursuit of that goal. To be happy, a person needs goals that require effort, a reasonable rate of success in achieving those goals, and personal control throughout the process. You might think we in industrial society have many goals we pursue and attain through effort, but Kaczynski says we merely pursue what he calls surrogate activities. Surrogate activities are artificial goals because they aren't for the purposes of meeting our basic biological needs and so aren't totally fulfilling. He says we merely think surrogate activities such as our jobs are fulfilling because we have to do very little in industrial society to meet our basic biological needs such as eating or having shelter. So we've never felt true fulfillment. He says there are 3 kinds of drives we experience in the pursuit of goals. 1, minimal effort. 2, serious effort. And 3, impossible. The power process, he says, is more about group 2, or serious effort. Our surrogate activities require minimal effort, but at the same time, many other things are impossible in industrial society because we don't have control over them. For example, our security depends upon decisions made by others, such as safety standards at a nuclear power plant, how much pesticide is in our foods, and how much pollution is in our air. Somebody else makes these decisions for us, and in many cases, we can't even know if what we're being told is true. He points out that technology seems to grant us freedoms, but it really takes them away. As each advance in technology is collectively accepted, we lose control in some new area. Cars have become so ubiquitous, you can't walk in many places. So you need to get further integrated into the industrial system by getting a driver's license, insurance, and registration. Or you can take the bus and have even less freedom. As we're increasingly able to alter our genes, it will become harder to enforce a code of ethics. First, genetic engineering will be used to treat genetic diseases, then further alterations will be seen as good. The upper class will decide what's good or not until we have a genetically engineered upper class and a distantly lower class taking genetic rolls of the dice. This is already happening as gene splicing is being used to treat diseases such as sickle cell anemia. Meanwhile, a scientist in China crossed the agreed-upon ethics line and genetically engineered children. We'll outsource decisions to computers until we no longer understand ourselves the decisions the computers are making. So we'll keep them running to keep the system afloat. At that point, the machines will be in control. Kaczynski thinks mood-altering drugs are overprescribed, often just to deal with the psychological stress of living in industrial society. If more people need, say, antidepressants to tolerate living in a depressing world, that world is then allowed to get even more depressing until the drugs are a requirement. This reminds me of the soma everyone in modern society takes in the dystopian science fiction book, Brave New World. That book has also been made into a series. I couldn't help but think about this loss of control as I watched people's behavior during the coronavirus pandemic. While I personally chose to follow protocols and get a vaccine, it was an interesting moment when industrial society clashed with individual autonomy. To sustain industrial society, which is so ubiquitous it's impossible to opt out, institutions deemed it necessary to make blanket decisions on the behalf of individuals. Some people weren't cool with that. Whether their reasoning made logical sense was irrelevant. The emotional roots of their reactions were understandable. One thought-provoking quote from the manifesto sounds like a prediction of the gig economy. It has been suggested, for example, that a great development of the service industries might provide work for human beings. Thus, people would spend their time shining each other's shoes, driving each other around in taxicabs, making handicrafts for one another, waiting on each other's tables, etc. This seems to me a thoroughly contemptible way for the human race to end up, and I doubt that many people would find fulfilling lives in such pointless busy work. They would seek other dangerous outlets. Drugs, crime, cults, hate groups, unless they were biologically or psychologically engineered to adapt them to such a way of life. Your immediate reaction might be that industrial society is worth the lack of control. It increases average lifespan and prevents early deaths from infant mortality, disease, or relatively easy fixes such as an appendicitis. Kaczynski says our obsession with longevity and staying youthful is a symptom of our lack of fulfillment due to the disruption of the power process. If we lived lives full of autonomous struggle toward goals that directly met our biological needs, we would be more at peace with aging and death. A quote. It is not the primitive man who has used his body daily for practical purposes who fears the deterioration of age, but the modern man who has never had a practical use for his body beyond walking from his car to his house. He then ties the disruption of the power process back to his criticism of leftism. He says leftist surrogate activity is activism or joining social movements. They have a goal and struggle toward achieving that goal, but they'll never be satisfied. This, he says, is how leftism creeps toward totalitarianism. Once one goal is achieved, another will be invented. His entire manifesto, by the way, is written from the perspective of we. He poses as a group of people called FC, standing for Freedom Club, and presents a strategy for his goal of destroying industrial society and replacing it with primitive society. Kaczynski points out that modernity separates us from our local communities. We break ties to family and move so we can work a job in the name of efficiency. He advocates for living in small groups and growing his anti-technology movement by having as many children as possible. Interestingly, He says to draw the conflict line in this movement between the masses and the power-holding elites, and cautions specifically against turning it into a conflict between those who are revolutionaries and those who are not. This is some impressive strategic thinking, as it was also mentioned in the book Blueprint for Revolution. I interviewed the author Sergei Popovich on episode 179. Popovich pointed out, for example, that Occupy Wall Street was a poorly branded movement because it drew a conflict line between those who could participate by camping out in the financial district and those who could not. Calling it the 99% would have drawn a more effective conflict line. Counterintuitively, Kaczynski advises to not try to gain political power. He says that if the Green Party were to get voted into office, it would cause massive unemployment, they would get voted out of office, and it would turn people off to the party. He supported free trade agreements such as NAFTA because he felt it would further integrate the industrial system, making it more likely it would collapse and causing such a collapse to be more widespread. He says to be anti-left, and this is where we start to see the motives behind his seemingly out-of-place opening rant. He doesn't want to see leftists take over his movement because he thinks they would replace the goal of eliminating modern technology with their own goals. He says leftists will never give up technology because ultimately they crave power. Basically, he doesn't want to work within any existing structures of industrial society. He instead wants to see living in industrial society get so bad that the hardships can only be blamed on the system. He says small-scale technology is robust to shocks. Local things such as planting crops, raising livestock, or making clothes. He points out that when the Roman Empire fell, the villages could still make a water wheel or steel, but the aqueducts were never rebuilt, their road construction techniques were lost, and urban sanitation was forgotten. Many people these days are surprised to find out that the Unabomber Manifesto contains intelligent and coherent ideas. They merely think of Ted Kaczynski as a mentally ill murderer. If he's so intelligent, why did he kill people? In the manifesto itself, Kaczynski explains that he felt this was the only way to get his message out. He reasons that if he had merely submitted his writings to a publisher, they would have been rejected. If they had been published, they wouldn't have attracted readers, because everyone is too distracted by entertainment. So, he says, in order to get our message before the public with some chance of making a lasting impression, we've had to kill people. As explained in my Trust Me, I'm Lying summary, humans have a negativity bias, and so media has a negativity bias. Ironically, this is a case where our paranoia about negative events apparently caused negative events. Newspapers and news shows covered Kaczynski's terror campaign for more than 15 years until he sent his manuscript, typed on a typewriter, to several newspapers essentially saying, "Publish this and I'll stop killing people." What Kaczynski did to get coverage makes the tactics Ryan Holiday confessed to look like actions of a saint. His bombings were pseudo-events with very real consequences. Assuming this was truly Kaczynski's strategy and not a backwards rationalization he came up with after doing what he simply wanted to do, was it an effective strategy? His reputation precedes him, such that people resist taking his manifesto seriously, given what he did. While he got his words published, even nearly 30 years after his last bombing, it's hard to see his words through the dark cloud of his crimes. Publishing the manifesto was an effective strategy for law enforcement in catching Kaczynski. Attorney General Janet Reno gave the okay for the Post and Times to publish the manifesto. This put it in front of enough people, the FBI was finally able to identify the anonymous killer. Kaczynski's brother's wife recognized him from what he said in the manifesto. Reading Kaczynski, I can't help but wonder, if he could have held off a little longer or been born in a different time, might he have been able to tolerate society? Kaczynski's terror campaign spanned a peak in what Marshall McLuhan calls mechanical technology. As his campaign was ending in 1995, the internet was proliferating in electric technology. This was a world where having a job meant commuting to an office, following a dress code, and working within a hierarchical organization. Once you were home, your only contact with others besides your family or people you called on the phone was media fed to you through your television or radio, or through objects that had to be transported, such as paper books, magazines, records, or VHS tapes. But the internet has further demechanized our world. More creators, such as myself, work with near-complete autonomy outside of traditional hierarchies. People connect with one another around interests. We communicate without borders. As Marshall McLuhan described in Understanding Media, which I summarize on episode 248, mechanical technology explodes our world, an unfortunate but apt metaphor in this context. Mechanical technology compromises our individuality to turn us into cogs that fit together, while electric technology implodes, allowing our individuality to once again blossom. In 1998, the Washington Post reported that Kaczynski nearly confessed to a psychologist in the late 60s that he fantasized about being a woman. He didn't confess and later cited that as the moment he decided to become violent. Maybe if his gender dysphoria had been more acceptable, his path may have been different. Today's society may not be the small-scale society Kaczynski envisioned, and this electric implosion certainly has its problems, especially as it conflicts with the structures in place from the mechanical world. But maybe it would be just a little less pressure so as to prevent trying to blow up the place. Love Your Work is brought to you exclusively by our Patreon supporters, including top supporters Jeffrey Mason and Bob Rosen. The theme music for Love Your Work is At Sea by Durena from the album About Everything and More by arrangement with Deep Elm Records at deepelm.com. Love Your Work is a production of Katabi, Inc.